I saw it on Linden Street.
Hello, and welcome to I Saw It on Linden Street, the show dedicated to the joy of finding an appreciation in cult films, exploitation oddities, beloved classics, and all points in between. I'm your host, Chris Roberts, inviting you to join us here at the Linden Street Cinema Experience Theater as we once again dig up a fun cinematic relic from the past. If you're new to the show, thank you so much for joining us. This isn't your standard film review. Rather, this is a synopsis of a film that we feel deserves to have another inspection. A little bit of background thrown in on the actors, information on the director, and hey, if I'm doing my job, perhaps you'll get a half-amusing story out of me. Fair be warned, while we don't cover all aspects of plot, we do discuss endings and spoilers. So, if you'd like to be surprised, please give the film a viewing before you listen to us. If you like us, and hey, I would hope that you do, please recommend this podcast to a friend, give us a favorable review, hit that subscribe button. We are winding down 2020 with a bit of a laid-back theme for this month. A little thing we're calling Cinematic Potpourri. That's a heady melange of conversations, cult films, and hey, we're going to wrap this month and subsequent year up with some listener mail. This week, we are starting off with a conversation with one Dr. Chance T. Worm, as he shares his thoughts for a second chance session, revisiting 1981's For Your Height Only. Join us! If you recall, we first talked about this film back in August for episode 73, where the dulcet tones of my voice recounted the fascinating story that belongs to one Mr. Ernesto de la Cruz, also known as Wang Wang, that powerhouse of Filipino martial arts talent. Like many, and I really mean many of the films I forced your favorite mad scientist and preeminent biologist Dr. Chance T. Worm to sit down and watch, this is actually an interesting cult film, and I get to get his take on things, so this discussion really reflects that. So I'm inviting you now, sit back, relax, learn something, and just enjoy the fact that you're hearing two aging nerds give their opinions on a really unique piece of international filmmaking as we have a discussion on this interesting action comedy. Well, welcome, everybody. I am yet again joined by Dr. Chance. We've got to have him on yet again. He has graced us with his presence. So thank you so much, Chance. How are you doing today?
Yeah, no problem. Doing all right.
Good to hear. So you were brave enough to sit through a little film that we've covered in the past. It was For Your Height Only.
Oh, yeah.
Starring the great Wang Wang from 1982. And just at first blush, what did you think about the whole ordeal?
You don't know how important cuts are in a movie until they just aren't there. Like, all of a sudden, stream of consciousness, brand new scene. Like, I had a real hard time discerning when they switched locations or day versus night. Time made no sense.
It is a film that has a very interesting style that does not lean towards the linear. So, yes, I would agree with that. Yeah. No, fair point. So, this is a fun, obvious James Bond spoof. I'm assuming you would agree with that statement. If by James Bond spoof, we are taking it to an extreme, obviously, because we have Wang Wang as Agent 00. He is at the time, the smallest man in the world.
Oh, wow.
By the Guinness Book of World Records, I believe he was considered the smallest leading man ever to hold that distinction. And I believe he was, I might be wrong, because I don't have my notes in front of me, but I believe he was 2'9".
Wow.
In total when he shot the film. So he is the world's smallest leading man in a major motion picture. So we got that going for us.
And yeah, he is portraying Agent 00 working for who knows.
Basically, yeah, I don't think that was covered.
Basically, because they talk about, you know, we're working for the organization, but they never really explain. Like, every once in a while they'll throw out that he's with Interpol, but they never actually explain who he's working on behalf of for Interpol. They're just saying, you know, hey, Interpol. I'm here. It's Interpol. You know, obviously the Manila branch of Interpol, but
obviously not yeah, much. I didn't know that. I had no idea where they were. This goes back to the cut. Like, I'm pretty sure the whole movie was filmed in an abandoned factory. Like,
oh, it was the Philippines, but hey, you can claim it's a abandoned factory.
No, I meant like legitimately the site of filming. I'm pretty sure because like when he went on his like little spy runs and was like trying to hide behind things, I feel like they just went around different corners of the same building and inside the same building, different angles, same building, no cuts. So like that similarity between shots just really threw me throughout the whole movie. Cause I'm like, I don't think he's moved. Oh wait, has he? Where are we? Like, I think the first time I saw him in this movie, he's like sitting at a table eating breakfast, reading a newspaper, right? Mm-hmm. And then just starts doing stuff. And that was like minute 2, 3. And already I'm like, I think I should have seen the first movie. Like, I thought it picked up midway through a different movie, which led me to a rabbit hole where I was like, has he been in other stuff? And that's where it kind of, I was like, oh yeah, he's a thing. He's like an icon.
I definitely feel that they shot around the same like 2 or 3 apartment complexes over and over again, reusing that parking lot, reusing those stairwells. That's for certain. Like,
oh, yeah.
Clearly, I mean, not to jump ahead and ruin anything, but like when you look at from the outside looking up, like when they have those different shots of him defending the girl in the parking lot where he's taking cover behind the cars and shooting up at the balconies. And then later yet again, where he does the stunt where he jumps out of the window with the umbrella and floats down. Like, it's clearly, it's like, it's the same building over and over again.
I forgot like, about that.
Yeah. Like, it's a nice touch, but you know, clearly you're like, okay, he's in the same apartment complex, no matter where he's at, what he's doing, he's going back to the scene of this crime, or they're just, you know, hoping we think all of it looks the same regardless.
I'm still real shaky on what connection he had to this woman. It looked like he was on a mission to save her from the get-go, and or just stumbled upon like her getting shot at. And
the opening scene? The opening
I guess that was the opening.
This is the beauty of it. Him saving that woman, it is a non sequitur. It is absolutely not related to the plot. It is very much like the, and I think it is their homage to James Bond. Usually in a James Bond film,
yeah,
the opening first 15-20 minutes that sets the scene is its own unique little slice of James having a successful mission somewhere where he, mm-hmm. you know, you get to see all the best parts of said mission. You know, he blows something up, shoots a bunch of guys. Usually it ends with him saving a woman / taking her to bed. And then you get, you know, roll the theme song, roll the cool music video that's going to, you know, give you the credits that sets up the film. And if it didn't exist, it's a complete non sequitur for the actual plot of the film. In this case, that is exactly what happens here. He intervenes, saves this woman, basically rescues her from this pimp, and the rest of the film doesn't matter. Like, it never goes back to actually being about her. It was just him protecting her in this 15-20 minutes of plot.
Yeah, and here I thought it was like catapulting us into the nope. rest of, okay, good.
Nope.
Okay.
It is a absolute like homage or ripoff, depending on your view of, we know James Bond movies do this, so we're going to do this in our film.
Wow.
So, yes, I mean, and I know that throws a bunch of people because
it's bold that they did that, you know, with very little hints. Like in James Bond, it's pretty established, like, oh, watching a spy movie, he must be on a mission. Opening with him like having orange juice and reading a paper and then stumbling into a gunfight, like a little different.
True. But to be fair, I mean, James Bond has had, I'm not looking this up, so I'm going off of like my very horrible memory. We are on No Time to Die coming up. Is going to be, I believe, Bond 24-ish. So, I mean, you're looking at precedent being set over dozens of films in the past. Wang Wang, or Special Agent Wang Wang, you are dealing with, technically, this is the second film he's done of him playing this James Bond character. And, like, again, after this, there's only going to be one more film that he's officially Agent 00, and then there's technically another film he does, which is a Western, where he plays essentially Agent 00, but set in the Old West.
Wow.
Where he's doing very much the same thing, saving people, you know, getting involved, but, you know, he's dealing with a, at one point, there's a great scene of him on a cart wielding a Gatling gun from the back. Which I know you're desperate to see, but still.
Well, so much of these fight scenes. Well, one, I would love to see him in like a shootout, like a classic Old West shootout. Because under that scenario, like, yeah, that makes sense. He'd be at a huge advantage, and that would be like an interesting look at like playing at his strengths without the audience having to wink, you know? Which is another thing I liked about this is like at one point watching this, I was like, oh no, this is like late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. Is this just people pointing and laughing at a little person? And then like the more the movie went on, it was like, no, he's in on it. They're pointing and laughing at James Bond and like Western movies. And also they love them. And also like, you know, he's an actual like, beloved icon. I didn't find that out from the movie, but like I did some digging.
I'm happy you actually said that, because actually one of the questions I was going to have for you is, did you think that if you had watched this film and gone in cold, and I know you kind of did, I told you to watch it, but you basically came into this film without knowing much about it. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, more or less. I knew that it was a pun, and I knew it was James Bond.
Harry,
who's probably short,
right? But you watching it now, and you've kind of said this already, but, you know, to absolutely put words in your mouth and shape this. So if you had to say, do you feel this is a film that mocks Wang Wang, or do you feel this is a film that's actually empowering for someone like him? What would you pick?
There were a lot of jokes that were relying on the height aspect, like some absurd like fight maneuvers. But at the same time, like, maybe the audience would be like, they'd love how ridiculous it is, but Wang Wang kicks some major ass. It's not like he was helpless. And even when they, like, designed all those fights and stuff, it was playing to his strengths of being, like, everything he did, it wasn't like, you know, a little person being in a one-on-one fisticuffs brawl. He was using, like, leverage, and he was clever, and, you know, he was just a good secret agent. So I was actually kind of surprised how they handled that. It felt like he had some say in how the stunts were done. And again, I did a little bit of digging after. Like, he was a stuntman, right?
Yes, he was. He started as a stuntman before he moved to being an actual leading action star.
Yeah, so I mean, I think they were it was a double-edged sword, because it could have just become like, oh, this is a ridiculous thing he's accomplishing. But they went the route of like, they admitted that it was a ridiculous premise, but that being out of the way, let's play to his strengths, being a little person. Like, he can hide where other people can't find, which again, kind of a dangerous line, but could have been worse. Like, it could have been more mocking.
Absolutely. No, without a doubt. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think it was absolutely set up to be, the joke is, and it's kind of like a, you know, a Johnny one note joke of, mm-hmm. Okay, he's small. Did you get it? Like, he's small. That's it. That's our joke. Except the problem is they made him so competent that you stop being in on that joke and you just start to assume that this is the new normal. And it becomes just a regular action movie at that point. Yeah. So it's one of those, like, if your goal was to mock him, you failed because you made a very competent movie. I mean, it might not be the best movie, but you made a competent action film that I would argue for 1982 is just about as good as another equally of its time.
Equally budgeted film. Movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yes, it's not a Stallone or Schwarzenegger movie, but
it didn't have that budget.
It didn't have that budget. But I mean, if you're comparing it to like any other, you know, run of the mill action movie, you're getting your money's worth. It's not like you're like, this is a piece of crap. It's a decent action film. There's shootouts, there's chases, there's stunts, there's everything you would expect to see.
Yes, I will. Yes, but I will say my two favorite scenes in the movie were he was in a courtyard in a gunfight and someone couldn't find him or spot him. It's like, yes. That makes sense. You know, I what's weird is as you're watching the movie, you start to get this, you admit, like, oh shit, if you actually had a little person as a spy, like, it would be difficult to, like, shoot at them if you were a bad guy. It's like, well, that's kind of cool. I liked that. And then he just, like, dives across the courtyard shooting, and it, like, keeps propelling him. And I'm like, yeah. Okay, that's... I've never seen that in a movie.
Is to slide while shooting.
Yep.
Like, he is... you know, Mr. Action Slide, like the entire film.
Yeah, I don't think he's never stopped sliding and SS and always be dick punching.
Oh, absolutely.
Like those were the two go-to moves for Wing Wing. And I was all for that. Like,
yeah, no, the amount of groinal trauma that you get to see in this film is, something to write home about it.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. No, it's a good deal. So here, I was going to save this for later, but we can tack onto it now. So do you think, and I view this film as unintentionally empowering. It was not made with the sensibilities to say like, let's empower a person who is different. Let's empower a little person. It's a byproduct of what actually happened. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not
mocking
it in any way, shape, or form.
I think that's why early on I got this sense like, oh no, is that what this is going to be, is the one note joke? And then I think honestly, Wing Wing is, for having very few lines, surprisingly like charismatic, likable. Like,
yeah, I was absolutely.
And so like, I feel like he designed his character to be competent because, you know, he was probably aware of what this was going to be. And I think he himself kind of turned that around, probably planning stunts and stuff. And I think that's commendable and really interesting. Didn't he get like Manila behind him?
He was a major star. He had a window. He had a 15 minutes of fame, but his 15 minutes of fame was about a 5-year window of actually being like well-regarded, considered an international, at least in Manila. You have to, I have to keep saying like international, at least as far as his home country of the Philippines would put him up against other international stars. And he was the one that was taking home the accolades and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because when this film was released, this film went toe to toe with Empire Strikes Back was still playing at this time. Cause you got to think of 1982, Empire is released in 1980, but when you look at how film distribution goes worldwide, they're still seeing Empire as a new movie, but it's going up against Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark in the theaters in the Philippines, and it is beating them in the theaters because it's, well, it's amazing. Local boy does good. I mean,
that's awesome.
He is a local celebrity. He's made this film. People are going out to see it. It is a Filipino production. It's starring a Filipino main character. It's an action movie. It's a comedy. At least it's been spun as an action comedy. So, like, it's checking all these boxes. On paper, it makes total sense. When you try to explain it to someone in real life, though, they kind of give you that, you know, raised eyebrow, head tilt, like, really? You know, like you're dealing with that.
Yeah.
When I say you're a little too woke because you're young and you're giving him credit, I will say this, and it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing to actually have. In hindsight, the whole him being empowered was a happy incident that happened. You know, it was a happy byproduct. It was not the intention. The intention truly was, and here's the sad part, the intention truly was the Johnny One Note joke of he's small. Did you not get it? He's small.
Yeah.
What happened, though, is like his competency and his popularity made people go, but he's just a person, which was wonderful. It was not the intention, but because of what it became, Wang Wang, for a very brief time, and I would give him credit for this, became the face of differently abled actors showing they can carry a film. And there's no problem with it. As long as the film is, quote, good enough to support the premise, he's doing an admirable job being an action star.
Yeah.
And there's, like, again, once you get past the hump of I'm watching someone who is not who I would normally think to see in this kind of movie, it all falls into place. Like, you're not at any point in time after the first 15 minutes, usually most people are not going, like, I'm not buying it. Like, no, he's fine.
What's interesting, okay, that's a really good point, because, like, when you're watching a James Bond movie, he's pulling off ridiculous stuff, too, and you still have to suspend disbelief for, you know, those stunts, those, what he can do, the inhuman amount of punches he can take, like, all these things, how bullets never hit him, like, and honestly, the leap between, I think in this scenario, the leap between those things where you're sitting up dangerous scenarios like that, the leap between, like, James Bond can pull it off and literally anyone regardless of disability, like if they're in that position, they must be there for some reason, kind of like James Bond, who is a middle-aged alcoholic womanizer, or someone who is, you know, differently abled from some other people.
True.
You're not looking at that so much as you are like, wow, he must be a secret agent for some reason.
Right.
And then you see like Wing Wang is like, oh, he just like jumps into people's hands and falls between their legs and flips them over. Like, he planned that.
Yeah, no, completely. So, I mean, that part's good. Now, again, because you're giving him agency in a time that did not give him agency, so this is not meant to make you feel bad. This is more meant to, like, lay it all out for you. So, in reality, Wang Wang, at least as it's been discussed, most likely wasn't completely, how to put it the best way, wasn't fully compos mentis during most of the filming. I'm not saying he was unable to understand what was going on, but he did not have that full range of being able to, quote, block his own scenes or set up how he wanted to do things.
Gotcha.
It was very much they would tell him what to do and he would do it. So in this regard, it becomes Eddie Neikart as the director being the person who gets the credit of, like, I know exactly what Wang Wang can do because I've worked with him before on stunts. I'm going to tell him to do it, and he's just going to do it.
Oh.
So, but again, that's no insult to him per se, but it's more to clear the air, like.
It just makes it uncomfortably a happy accident.
It is very much
a little too razor's edge on which way that could have fallen.
Very much so. This movie skates that line right up until that edge of where you, in theory, everything about it should make people have the hink, but it's actually a triumph and a success story because of how well all of it went and because of how well respected Wang Wang was, at least in his heyday.
I gotta say, I'm a Wang Wang fan.
And I would argue, if the more you learn about him, the more people should be. Like, it's just one of those, his is a triumph and a success story. There is a tragedy to it. There is a downside to all of this, and we can get into it. But
I stopped reading the Wikipedia article because I knew something was coming up. Like, I didn't want to know what happened.
Well, you might as well skip this because, you know, it's not so swift. No, I mean, basically, like, his survival is rather amazing. because, you know, born into extreme poverty. He's born in 1957. There's not exactly like a lot of people that have the ability to set up incubators to treat someone who is born with the severe level of primordial dwarfism that he was born with. His parents kept him, basically his father put him in a makeshift shoebox that acted as an incubator for him for the first year of his life.
That's incredible.
He was born the size of a Pepsi bottle when he first came out. And his mother basically chalked all of this up as to being, you know, good Filipino Catholic. You can't go with the logical medical response. Instead, she assigned it to being a divine sign that he is literally the embodiment of the Santo Nino, which is their patron saint of the child Jesus that they pray to through their Catholic iconography. And there's a whole backstory about why it's important to the Philippines. We don't have to get into it, but basically her argument is, I've been praying to the sainted baby Jesus and I've delivered a son who is basically a permanent child. So in her mind, this is an absolute wonderful thing, even though that kid had some really rough times to get
through. Yeah, and I assume medical issues that are associated with this.
And he did. No, his entire life he had all kinds of medical issues. He was battling. He had heart issues.
Yeah.
He had, obviously, his skeleton was not a normal person's skeleton because he's dealing with primordial dwarfism, so it puts different strain on your bones and on your organs and whatnot. But growing up, Wang Wang is technically, I believe, my Filipino is not good. If my research was anything, Wang Wang is considered a derisive term that you would use for a small, annoying dog. And that is what his friends and family called him, because he was always getting into things and causing trouble and being a precocious little rambunctious child, which I would argue paints him as a normal person. He's a kid. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, a kid is a kid is a kid, no matter how they're born. And that's a positive. And I'm spinning it that way because I really, truly want to see it that way.
Yeah.
But he grows up and he was drawn to doing martial arts. So, like, even though he's not fully... Basically, they've always said that he retained the mental abilities of about a 12 to 13-year-old. Like, he was always, like, a preteen and never kind of got out of that mode.
Gotcha. So when you were saying, like... he wasn't necessarily empowered to block his own scenes or mentis compass. You weren't saying like he wasn't like didn't have the education. You're saying there's like cognitive disabilities.
There is cognitive disability, but he's not. I don't care for the treadmill euphemism. He is not, at least as I would have said growing up, he is not experiencing a level of mental retardation that is stopping him from understanding what's going on. He's just not fully capable of making some of those larger long-term ramification decisions. So like he could tell you like, I'm not having a good time. I'm hungry. I want to stop doing that. Like he has all of that wherewithal.
Right.
But if you were to tell him like, sit down with a financial planner, we're going to talk about your five-year plan, he's out. So to me, it's always been the setup is you're dealing with a person that never really got past being about 12.
Gotcha.
So again, they are functional. They are absolutely an individual. They have their own wants, drives, desires, and needs, and they can express them, but they're not really going to be able to like plan out their life. So it's two sides of the same coin. You have to give him credit because he's absolutely a person that had agency, but at the same time, you can't say he was fully riding the bus and deciding where to go. If that makes sense at all. But at least he wanted to do martial arts and he got into martial arts and then he became good at it. Because again, if you watch him,
the man moves,
he's fluid. He can do things. It's just I was
surprised by the quality of like the fight scenes.
Yeah.
Like,
the humor is just his height. And I say humor knowing tongue is firmly embedded in my cheek. Like, I'm not mocking him for it. It's just, it is the juxtaposition of seeing him taking on someone who's like 6'6", at him at 2'9", coming up and, you know, throwing a punch, knocking someone down. And even though, yes, it starts as a groin punch, he then does a spinning kick. And
right, yeah.
for the spinning kick he delivers, you're like, that was good, regardless yeah. of his own size. Yeah,
I can't do that. Like,
no, I definitely can't do that. I'm not going to pretend. So, no, I'm totally on board. But, yeah, so I guess the issue becomes, this is a film that it's unique, it's empowering, but it's a film I would argue you can't make now. Like, you couldn't make this film now, even if you had everything lined up. If you were like, I have a little person who has all of the requirements to do what they're doing, people would say you are mocking them. And they would say, you can't do this. And it would also, I would argue, I don't think it would be treated with the same level of, I guess this film was not made with reverence, but it just happens to have a certain level of, well, he is what he is, so we're making a movie. Like,
yeah.
Well, they're not mocking him for it. So it's just, he's our action star. This is who we're making it with. If you made this film now, like if Peter Dinklage suddenly became an action star, it would be played for laughs. It would not be played to be a serious action film. And this movie is a serious action film. Yes, it has a few jokes with it, but you don't have to treat it as anything other than an action film and people will believe you.
Yeah. It reminds me, what was the movie that had, Gary Oldman playing a little person?
Oh, Tiptoes.
Tiptoes. This movie was way less offensive.
Controversial film, by the way. Like,
I feel like this movie was a little less, like, because that one, the lead wasn't a little person,
no.
And they had a very competent actor as a little person in it. They had Peter Dinklage, and like, I don't need. Yeah. It's mind-boggling. And then you have this film, which on its surface should have been just an abomin. Like, it should have been so terrible and somehow fell on the right side.
But for some reason, like, for good, well, I shouldn't say for ill. It's good. I'm not upset that it fell on the good side of history in being like, here we have this film that gave full agency to this person who was really an interesting, charismatic person who went on to do other things that are equally interesting. And by the way, you can be entertained by it. Like, it's a positive all through and through. But at its onset, they didn't care. That wasn't their goal. Their goal was to make money. The goal was to make a movie that's an exploitation movie, that the joke is, we have a little person who's going to be in an action movie. And that's the joke. And it's the only joke, and it's the joke that keeps playing over and over again. It just happens to be they made something that was interesting and competent and kind of fun.
I don't know. I guess if you had to say which one kind of comes out on top as far as the, like, damage to, you know, a little person community, you know, Your Height Only, like all of the Austin Powers movies.
Oh,
Tiptoes. Like,
oh,
which one's doing the most damage? And I feel like Your Height Only comes out as, like, on top as far as, like, and it was like early 80s
being progressive and giving agency to someone. No, absolutely. No, I absolutely would agree with that.
Blew me away in an unexpected and good way. I'm just sad to find out that it was a complete fluke and not like,
it was a fluke, but it was a fluke that they kept doing over and over again. Again, for this window of time, he made multiple pictures, and he was starring with the actor at the time was named Dolphy, and he was like, I guess the best way to put it was, like, think of it this way. He was like the Jim Carrey of the Philippines of that day.
Mm.
So he was starring in movies with this well-known comic of the day, and they were having, like, they were headlining films together. Like, it was a positive thing. They were making money. They were very popular. Nobody was, like, mocking them for doing this. This was, like, celebrated. It was like, hey, come see the new smash comedy hit starring Wang Wang and Delphi.
Gotcha. That's a little different. So like he already had a starring role before, just in comedy, a different
genre. What you're looking at, this is like his first or second outing where he was like going solo. Where he's having like, okay, this is now his, I said Delphi, it's Dolphy, I apologize, but the fact remains, this is his first like solo, like I'm gonna carry this movie myself and I'm the lead, and you know, he's doing it, like it is what it is. So yeah, it makes a difference that he then shoots this. He shot back to back Agent 00, he shoots For Your Height Only, and then he follows it up the next year with Kid Impossible, which again is him still playing Agent 00. It's just the next chapter of that series.
That's cool.
And part of the problem that makes it so, actually I would argue crushing, is the Philippines, at least for their movie industry, they did not maintain or take care of their films. Like, you'd shoot a film, you throw it in the can, you'd make it run the circuit, and then it would just get thrown somewhere in a closet and no one would touch it again, and it would rot. So a good majority of the films that Wang Wang was in have literally disintegrated into dust. No one has them. And they were films that like people saw. They made box office records. Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, I guess my question is, like, we talked about it falling on the good side of that very thin line.
Yes.
Do you think that's how it was actually met? Like, was it popular because of that? Or do you think it played very well at what it was supposed to play at? Audiences bought into it and it only holds up now.
I think it's the latter. I do think it's the latter. I would love to tell you we're wildly
progressive
society, but I think what had happened was, so here, let's set the scene. For Your Height Only comes out in 1982. And at the same time, Imelda Marcos, I don't know how familiar you are with the Philippines and for their wonderful President for Life situation that they had going for them. I want to say, was it Ferdinand Marcos ascended to the presidency without looking it up? I want to say in the late 50s, maybe early 60s. And he basically held sway up through, I don't think he basically fled the country until the early to mid 90s. Basically he went into hiding in Hawaii. Basically the United States gave amnesty to a dictator and his family after basically they were rushed out of the country. But Imelda Marcos was very famous because she was one of those,
anytime you ascend to the presidency, it doesn't end well for a number of people.
Usually. Correct. But she was trying to be this cultural game changer as the first lady for life. I believe if I'm correct, and again, not looking everything up, I believe one of her claims to fame was she was the lady that had like something silly, like 10,000 pairs of shoes as, you know, El Presidente's wife for, you know.
Everyone needs a hobby.
Exactly. But her goal was she wanted to promote Filipino culture. And in 1982, she was hosting a Filipino film festival, which was supposed to be an international film festival that they would vote on films that they were going to subject to the larger world with the full backing of the Filipino government, is saying like, this is what we've done. And to the horror of some people in attendance, For Your Height Only was the film that was selected to be put forward as something that was going to be showing, this is what the Philippines has to offer.
It was
done in like a big deal. Like when I say they had a film festival, it was like a like hardcore big deal. They invited celebrities. They had like Brooke Shields, Priscilla Presley, Franco Nero, Jeremy Irons, like in attendance. And they were like, and we're showing these films. And then the audience is going to vote on what they think is going to go forward and represent all things Filipino culture. And For Your Height Only is what was selected at the Manila International Film Festival. So what was supposed to be a comedy, a spoof, something you were supposed to be laughing at. And you were supposed to be laughing at for the, what I would now say is the wrong reasons, at the time, it was wildly progressive as being a film that is giving, you know, absolute sovereignty to these people that you would normally not see in a film. And I will say, to their credit, after the film did well, the Marcos family, even though they're a dictatorship, went out of their way. They used Wang Wang as an unofficial mascot, which was both good and bad. They used him to help further their political aims, but they would promote him, and how they promoted him was to highlight the fact that, look, he wanted to be a film star, and he overcame his physical limitations to show you he could do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
And they spun it as a positive. Granted, for the wrong reasons, but at least in the day, they had the wherewithal to say, like, this normally doesn't happen. Let's make, you know, lemonade out of lemons that we have here. If we're picking something that normally people are thinking is a comedy, let's spin it as this is a triumph of somebody actually becoming what they've always wanted to be, which is a star, even though it's not a conventional star.
Yeah, but that's not even, I guess at the time that makes sense, but that's not even really what makes it, I don't know. That's not even really the positive light that I feel you should take out of this, which is,
I agree.
Like,
no, completely agree. But
it leaves not a great taste in hopefully quite a few mouths, but it sounds like it was fine at the time.
At the time, it was considered, again, on the bleeding edge of being very progressive, yeah. And wow, have you ever seen anything like this? No, I haven't. Like, it was very, you know, look at this. This is amazing. No one else is doing this. But again, the flip side is it had a very short shelf life.
Yeah.
Excuse the pun. It was meant to be like a one or two thing, and then it was done. And the fact that he got like a run of, he had like six or seven movies and then he was basically sidelined. Part of it was he was sidelined because the people that were backing him basically retired from the business and they had no use for him. And it was right about the time people were just about getting tired of him. So it was like kind of like multiple things had lined up to put a stop to it.
It would be interesting. I feel like that's the run that he had is on par with a lot of like action stars, like flash in the pan action stars anyway, like 5-7 years, usually
action
when
star, pop singer, take your pick, yeah. Like anybody that is in the popular culture, he had a comparable run, as you would say, to anyone else. It's just a matter of, you know, what do you do with him? And in this case, he basically got used by a bunch of other people. Part of what made it bad is the fact that like he films these movies, he is taken care of. He was never wanting for clothes or food. He always had a place to live. He always,
I was going to say, was he compensated the way he should have been? Yeah.
No, he was not. So it was one of those, like, it was like, you have your clothes. We gave you a nice place to live. You'll live with us. We'll make movies together. You're taken care of. Don't worry, Wang. We gotcha. The downside is they paid him like nothing.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of
like a pittance for each of the films he made, even though the films he's made are making like, for, you know, Manila, the film makes like $2 or $3 million. Everyone gets a taste of that. He doesn't. He was paid like $100 and that was it. So that's his horrible. Family is still living in dire poverty. He is not experiencing that poverty, but he's not getting compensated. That's going to keep him out of said poverty. So by the time the run comes to an end, he has nothing to show for it. But now the flip side is, he's starting to have a downward trajectory with his own health problems and everything else. Right. So there's no retirement plan here and nobody paid him for the work he did. So it was very like, it is tragic in the sense. I mean, he's basically left. He's hooked up with Peter and Cora Cabelas are the producers that have been working with him and putting him in all these movies, working with Eddie Neikart and a few other directors. And they would just keep taking care of him. And when they're done with him, they kind of do a lateral and hand him over to the first family. So the Marcos family, literally the dictator's family, is taking care of you at a certain point. So you're basically like now a national, like, puppet is the wrong, you're a figurehead, so to speak. You get to be like a mascot for this family, but you're only a mascot as long as you're popular, and he's already waning in popularity. So they would use him at like a few PR events. Like he talked at a few like rallies. They gave him a job. I believe he was considered to be a customs official at one point. So they made him an official greeter at the Manila International Airport, where he was issued a badge and a gun, and he got to go greet people that were like coming in for tourism. But eventually that all dried up and went away too. So what you're left with is he moved right back into the slums with his parents and lived there until he died. And he died in his early to mid 30s. He died at like 34 of, it was a massive heart attack, but he had already had several strokes at that point. So the heart attack really just finished off what was already, you know, kind of a downward spiral. So, I mean, again, you're dealing with somebody that the back end is a tragedy. No sugarcoating it, you know, no doubt, no one would argue with you. But at least on the front, Ascension, nobody said no to him. Like when he was like, I want to be in action movies, people are like, let's figure that out. So, I mean, he has this really interesting story that makes it so that even if you were like, I hate the movie, I don't care about the movie, he's such an interesting character in real life.
Fascinating life.
And I, again, the concept that there is now Leavold went out and did his documentary Search for Wang Wang, where he basically was trying to figure out, Andrew Leavold was an Australian filmmaker, a video store owner who grew up watching, obviously Australia being close to the Philippines, they got a lot of, you know, movies out of Manila much easier than we would get here. You know, he sees this and he's like, I want to find out more about this guy. And he does a deep dive and does this whole background into the life of Wang Wang, you know, and finds out, well, he was born, his real name's Ernesto Cruz or Ernesto de la Cruz. You know, he's one of like five boys. He grew up in the slums of Manila. He studied martial arts. Like everything about this story is a fascinating triumph if you want to spin it that way. And I would argue it's deserved to be spun that way. And it makes it so that even if you don't like the movie, there's something to be gleaned off of this that's positive.
That's a lot to digest, like
take in.
A lot of horrible stuff there at the end. Like, yeah. Anyway, what was your question?
So let's spin back at least a little bit to the plot to kind of put it in perspective. Your thoughts on the plot in general?
I'm not sure what it is at this point.
But here, here's the thing. There isn't much of one. That's the thing. He's literally...
It's just his...
To foil the distribution efforts of the syndicate. Which is...
Him, the syndicate.
Which is him breaking into places, punching a bunch of guys, and arresting people. To then go to the next place to break in, punch a bunch of guys, and arrest people. Like, you're never really, they talk about drugs, but you never really see anything.
You never get an end game from anyone.
No, it's a lot of warehouses and or places that look like the back of bars or the back of restaurants and alleys. And that's about it. So, I mean.
And an awful lot of bad guys. Was this dubbed?
Very much so. Oh, did you?
Like, was Wang Wang dubbed?
Wang Wang was dubbed.
Okay. I wasn't, like, I knew the bad guys had to be dubbed because there's no way that every single person in the Philippines had a Southern accent.
Oh, and they didn't all talk like Edward G. Robinson. There wasn't a lot of like, yeah, boss. Yeah. See, we're gonna rough you up a bit. Huh?
I wasn't sure if they also did that with Wang Wang, but.
No, he absolutely was dubbed. For sure. How did you feel about the reveal of Mr. Giant at the very end?
Remind me about Mr. Giant, Chris. I've deleted quite a bit of this movie.
Mr. Giant is the evil mastermind behind this entire plot. He is the other little person who Wang Wang fights at the very end.
Oh my god.
Who was
Yeah, that's when it
all of this craziness.
That's when it started getting Yeah, that's kind of when it. Yeah, that's when it got full circle of like, ooh, I think I get what this movie's actually about, which is just, you know,
exploitation.
Yep,
it is an exploitation movie.
Yeah, but it was. I would like to say a surprising reveal, but nothing really surprised me in the movie. It was just, yeah, I got nothing, man. That was a little upsetting. Like, especially because I imagine it was the only other little person actor that was really getting anything, or someone else who wanted to be like Wing Wing, who is also probably just being exploited. And now that you've mentioned it, not paid anything. And their fight scene was pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, it's an entertaining fight scene for sure. For sure. No, I agree. The reveal is a little bit like, really? Okay. And followed by the fact that Wing Wing kills him with a burst of machine gun fire, which is
a little overkill.
Very much so. Like, especially in the concept, it's like, we're going to duke this out, except we don't really duke it out. I knock it down once, and then I just rake your corpse with machine gun fire. Like,
it's, also, wasn't Mr. Giant killing other people that whole time? Like, he was offing some of his own people.
I mean, not like, directly, but yes, he was ordering people killed. So, okay. Yeah, he's...
I must have... Like, I thought at one point I heard, like, Mr. I probably just heard, you know, Mr. Giant had this guy killed. It's like... At the end, I was like, how the hell did he kill them?
But, oh, I'm with you. So, I'll say this. I know you haven't listened to it yet, but I think I'm going to make you stop here. And I'm going to make you listen to the Wang Wang rap, because you absolutely need to take this in, and then we'll go from here. So you need to look up on YouTube Wang Wang by the Chuds.
Trouble, those are your best. Put your weapon down slow. Keep your hands low down where he can see him. To put him up high, he's a tiny human being. Guaranteeing security to Filipino citizens. It's all the same thing to Wang Wang, guilty, innocent. He's got his own style, he's got a cute little smile. In fact, one time he even got picked up by a pedophile. Kill that, he's skilled at the art of attack. He got a razor blade, had a little guy in a rocket pack. Doesn't like booze, so never pour him a shot of scotch. Just give him a coke and you won't get a pop in the crotch. These movies you love to watch, you know that they all sweet. Wang Wang is doing this thing, thing under 3 feet. They say that he's whack, that he's weak, yeah, yo, you know what? They say that in the Philippines, and watch out for the bowl cut. Wang Wang, I love you, my Wang Wang. It has a way of just gripping the ear and going to. So here, I'll reset. So Chance. Although,
yeah. Watching that video brought up quite a few feelings that I forgot I had watching this.
So would you say it was entertaining?
Oh, yeah. I loved the movie. Like, it was fun. It's fun. It's a fun action movie, but the video, I did love that there was just no attempt at sorting out the bad guys or their plot, and there was no attempt at, like, what agency he works for.
Nope.
And I did remember at one point, the guy who gave him the gadgets was just complaining about how much everything cost. He's basically just like, this was way too expensive. Here you go.
Based on that, sorry to interrupt you, but just getting your thought on gadgets. So what did you think of the fun X-ray specs that he has?
Did they come into play besides seeing through women's clothing?
Not at first. He does get to use them by 3/4 of the way through the film, where he sees a bunch of would-be assassins hiding behind the curtains. But they make it a point to show that the dudes, as he sees them, all look like they're naked behind the curtains, because again, it doesn't just see through objects, it sees through your clothes. So when Wang Wang puts on the glasses, he's yet again seeing a bunch of guys hiding behind curtains and behind, you know, furniture, but now they all look like they're naked and gripping guns, which I thought was a nice touch, because yes, it's ludicrous when they show him seeing the women of the typing pool.
But at least they're consistent.
But they're consistent. You know, like, it was like, okay, so like, he sees everyone naked no matter what when he wears these glasses.
Well, like you said, this was a very progressive movie, and it was also a weird hill to die on, right? For consistency. The Razor hat.
Razor hat, remote control Razor hat.
Yep, classic. That was very Bond feel. Honestly, from some of the gadgets Bond's had, like, they were just slightly more imaginative in this movie.
The poison detecting ring.
Oh yeah.
That he wears, the, you know, his specialty gun, which of course can be converted into then a machine gun.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. But yeah, the other thing, the only real problem was the, like, trying to make him a women magnet. Which is fine. It's just the way every woman in the movie interacted with him was very, like, maternal and, like, crouched down and, like, tugged on his suit lapels and, like, patted his cheek, kissed him on the... It was disturbing.
People, like, they treat him like a little boy, and then in the next sentence they're like, would you like to go to bed with me? Which makes no sense for the actual thing that just happened.
And I think there was one time he's like, basically like, stop it, I got stuff to do. And she's like, I just can't help it. Followed by, like, essentially just patting him on top of the... It was weird to see, and kind of brought to light probably some of the issues we were talking about earlier for how the actors interacted with
working
him in
with
general.
What they had, making the best out of what they had.
Yeah, that was uncomfortable and a little, not the best thing to show, probably.
No, I gotcha. So, if you had to sum it up, like, obviously, this is probably a film you can't get made today.
No.
If you could, though, like, let's say you could make this today, who would you want to see cast? Like, is there somebody that, like, sticks out? Like, you're like, I want the bad guy to be X, and I want the, you know, the boss to be Y, or is there just nobody that comes to mind?
Oh, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. I will say that I would like to see a biopic or something about the stuff that he went through, that I think should be like an actual, like, little person from the Philippines who is hired and, you know, actually gets compensated this time. But
what you're saying is you want, like, a...
They did the Bruce Lee biopics.
Bruce Lee, so you want, like, a full-on biopic where someone will play Wang Wang?
Yeah.
Someone plays Wang Wang making the film. Interesting.
Honestly, like, he was a movie star. These movies are cheesy. You can laugh at them for being cheesy. I don't think you can help but laugh at some of the fight scenes for being cheesy. But it honestly has the same level of cheese and enjoyability as an actual Bond film from, like, the 60s, 70s. Like, offset the Bond films by a decade and you have this movie.
Correct.
As far as actions are
concerned.
So it had that cheesy enjoyment. I think the really fascinating part is, like, Wang Wang, like, his story. Like, I loved watching him do the stunts because he could do them. He was very skillful. So I would like to see something about, like, little bit of the life of Wingman.
And no joking aside, to film him jumping from that balcony.
Yeah.
He jumped.
I forgot that from happened.
The balcony. Yeah. He was on a guideline. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he had a rope attached to him, but there was like, when you're like, I wonder how they did that. There's no wonder he jumped off the balcony. He started at like the 12th floor and he just jumped off. Like yeah. It was.
Yeah. He was fearless.
Yeah. No, I'm totally.
But no, that's, you bummed me out telling me all those facts about how horrible the end of his life was.
I mean, again, taking it as the whole man theory of there was good, there was the best times of him making it, and then there was the decline. And I mean, he had a decline. It's unfortunate, but it happened. And again, to me, he is a person in a life that should be celebrated through any of the film that you can get your hands on that he was actually a part of, because he's such an interesting character and he had a really interesting life. But again, if nothing else, I definitely think everybody should go see Andrew Leibold's The Search for Wang Wang, because it really uncovers Wang Wang's biography. Like, it is like the epitome of like, do you want to learn about this guy? He was an interesting guy. Here is what happened. We're going to talk to his like remaining surviving family and friends, and we're going to find out who he was and what he did. And like, it is an absolute great biography to go like get your hands on for like a documentary. Do it. Like, it's well worth your time. But yeah, it's just a fascinating story that you would not think it was one of those, like, in digging it up, this was just to me like a silly film that someone recommended to me, and I did not realize the rabbit hole I was going to end up going down.
Have you,
when I first encountered it,
have you watched all the other ones? I feel like you must have.
I have not seen 00, or Agent 00 is not available. I have seen clips from The Wild Wild Wang. That's the Western he did. And I have seen clips from Kid Impossible, but I have not seen the full film. And Kid Impossible is something you can get on DVD still. Like, it is available and it is out there. I will say, like, For Your Height Only is starting to become a harder DVD to get, because
really,
it wasn't a big seller. And Mondo Macabro that put it out is, I'm not saying they're going away, but until they like feel that there's a need to release it to Blu-ray, like, they're not like moving on doing reprints of anything. So it's kind of one of those things, like, it's going to become harder and harder to get as copies go out of print, because people are just selling off what they have left in the, you know, stockpile, and that's going to be it. Kid Impossible is something I would like to get my hands on. It's a little harder to get here, but it's not totally beyond the pale. I want to say, like, you can still get it for anywhere between $15 and $20, but you're getting it from like a really weird DVD import. And all of this came about because I had heard about the movie, but I'd never seen it. But in dealing with Peter Martin of the Veloci podcast, and he is Veloci Peter on the Veloci podcast. He also does Ninja News Japan podcast. He was like, have you seen these? And he's in Japan. So like, Wang Wang is like, again, because you're dealing with the Philippines and dealing with cultures that intermix, like, the Japanese love Wang Wang, and like, he has a full like he's part of the culture there too, because they grew up watching him.
That's cool. It's
part of their entertainment. So he was like, you need to see these if you haven't. So he's the one that put me on the track to like actually hunting him down.
That's really so cool.
It's been totally neat. I can't claim that like this was one thing I've always been really hip to. I haven't been hip to it. I knew that there was a movie out there that existed,
really, Chris?
And that was about it.
You're not really super hip to early 80s Philippine cinema.
You know, there are times that I just, certain things pass me by, and you know, I gotta admit, call a spade a spade, I was not on the bus for this.
I gotta be honest, I had you pegged wrong. I thought you were a man of priorities.
I figured as much. I'm sorry for disappointing you. Yeah, but so like to me, like it is definitely a interesting thing to dive into. The downside is it's a very limited pool that you get to dive into, because a lot of the things that he was involved with, they don't exist anymore. Just they physically don't exist. The film has rotted away and there is no copy of it. And part of that is just the way Filipino film studios took care of their resources. In short, they didn't. So like,
it's interesting. I wonder if they just, all studios at that time had the idea, like, this is just a cash grab. Like we're going to make the movies. And when we're done making money, who gives a crap?
No, it absolutely was. I'm not at all like gaslighting you or hyperbole. It is exactly like that. I'm trying to look and see, the documentary, Mark Hartley, the gentleman that did the Not Quite Hollywood Ozploitation documentary, that basically, I think you have a copy of it now. That gentleman who did it, he, before he did Not Quite Hollywood, which got into the Ozploitation, he did a documentary called Machete Man's Unleashed, which suffers its title, but the entire documentary is about all of these quick cash grab movies that were made in the Philippines for a quick buck in the 1970s, because a bunch of American, British, and Australian filmmakers could go to the Philippines. It's a tropical setting. It's super cheap. You can grind out your quick movie, or sometimes they'd shoot two movies back to back because you had the same actors, you're on the same location, why not? Boom, shoot your film, done, go release it. And then they would move on. So it's a whole movie that breaks down the Filipino film scene and like who was using it at the time. So it's another, like, if you're interested, it's another film to actually like dive into and look at, because it's kind of an interesting take on it. And it sort of explains like these films, like if it wasn't done by an American picture company, if it wasn't Amicus or American International, you know, people, or Roger Corman, you know, guys that were used to cranking out crap, but they knew what they were doing, and they would crank out crap with the intention of, yeah, we're going to crank it out, and then in another 5 or 10 years, we'll sell it again to you on video cassette. Like it, they had a plan. It also gets into some of those filmmakers that were local filmmakers that they just made a movie to make a movie. And once they sold it, they were like, we did it, it's done. And then it just rotted in the can and nobody saw it. So if you were not one of those lucky people that got to see, you know, Agent 00 when it first came out, it's lost to time. I know, tragic.
That being said, I will likely not watch another movie starring Wing Wing
at this rate
anytime soon, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, there was very little not to enjoy at multiple levels, depending on however you want to engage with it.
But I agree.
Just an oddball one-off, or like, I guess dissect it kind of like we did.
No,
or just the agree. Dude had a real straight punch for groins, like real solid connection.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't want to be on the receiving end of a Wang Wang punch. No. He seems like he's going to take you down hardcore.
Oh, yeah.
And again, now that you've heard the Chud song, it's in your head, you know that you're going to receive a spinning kick from behind.
That's a mistake. I don't know if I recommend that song.
Excellent. Okay. No, I think everyone should get involved and perhaps see a Wang Wang film, should at least take the time to see this one. So if you had to, would you tell people they should go out and see For Your Height Only if they have it at their disposal?
Where are they going to go to see this, Chris?
Just if they had the opportunity.
So like if it's just playing at your local theater. Yes, go see it. Definitely see it if it's playing at your local theater.
Absolutely. Yes, if I can hijack and, you know, take over one of the local cinemas here.
Or if someone happens to mail you a copy of the DVD, watch it. Don't ask questions like happened to me. Or, you know, watch it wherever you can.
I think that's fair. No, this has been good. Well, I think I think that wraps this then, don't you?
I think we hit the bottom of the barrel for Wang Wang.
Oh, poor Wang Wang. No, it's good time. Well, thank you, Dr. Chance. We appreciate hearing from you as always. We look forward to hearing from you again on some future episodes, perhaps breaking down some other interesting martial arts, crazy hyper action when we get to it. So I look forward to chatting with you again then.
Sounds good. It was fun. So thanks for letting me / forcing me to watch this movie.
Anytime, sir. Well, thank you, Chance.
There you have it. Our breakdown conversation on For Your Height Only. And you know what that means. That's going to wrap things up officially here for this episode of I Saw It on Linden Street. Thank you so much for joining us. We do hope you'll tune in again. I'd like to extend an extra special thank you to Dr. Chance. We do absolutely appreciate his insight, as well as his very foolish and trusting nature to watch things that I happen to suggest to him. Just kidding. I appreciate it, buddy. If you like us, please give us a favorable review on Apple Podcasts, hit that subscribe button, or hey, just do that wherever you're listening to us on. Swing by, check out our website, that's lscep.com, where we have articles, episode links, and comics for you to peruse. We're also featured on Podchaser, that's a podcast database for listeners and creators of podcasts alike. Find us there, give us a follow and a review if you could, please. And hey, feel free to also like any of the lists that we're a part of. Give us a boost in those old rankings. The more reviews and the increased likes, that affects those marvelous algorithms, and it makes us more searchable. And, you know, then we can share these kinds of films with more people. And you want to help us do that, don't you? Of course you do. As always, if you'd like to get in touch with us, make a comment, ask a question, send us wonderful things, please email us at lindenstreetcinemaexperience@gmail.com. On that note, I'm opening it up again. We are taking in questions, comments, concerns, complaints for this year-end mailbag we have coming up at the end of the month. You want me to feature your favorite cult film? Write us, tell me about it. You think I made a wrong call? Write us, tell me about it. You've wanted pictures of Chris doing a little bit more than just posing? Well, you get the picture. If you'd like to be even more personal, or you wish to be contributing a segment in the sidecar, please send us an audio message by way of Anchor. That's a free and easy app to use. So, until next time, please take care out there, wash your hands, wear a mask, please stay healthy, and remember, life's too short not to live in the past. Take it easy out there, everybody.